What are we going to talk about besides misery today? Well, it's Sunday, January 12th. This is the most recent episode of Not Half Bad. And I think for both Dave and I, we're looking more at the bad side of Not Half Bad.
Yeah, when weeks like this happen, we always just think about changing the title, but what are you going to do?
We could change the title. What would we change it to? Come on!
just yeah, you know, like in comic books when they swear, like the at sign and an exclamation mark.
And the hashtag.
So I'm Dave from On the Banks, the Rutgers blog. You can find me at Dave_White on Twitter.
And this is Norman of Rumble in the Garden. You can find me at Ecoast Bias, or you can find the Rumble Speed at RumbleSBN on Twitter. What we have this week is St. John's team in need of a win after a week off playing Villanova, and they lost. And a Rutgers team that, you know, they don't have a winning record. Nobody's expecting a whole lot, but one likes to see good performances.
And they had a week off, too.
And they had a week off, and they played Cincinnati and lost.
Yeah. But here's what's interesting, because, I mean, like I said, I didn't see the Rutgers game, but I was at the Devils game. So I didn't see the game, kind of followed on my phone, but you were just saying it seemed like Rutgers was competitive for 30 minutes. Cincinnati has traditionally been, much like Louisville, has traditionally been just a terrible matchup for Rutgers. I think they're 1-12 against Cincinnati since Cincinnati entered the Big East.
Ouch.
Something like that. And, you know, just, I don't know. But, yeah, like I said, I didn't see the game. So what happened?
Oh, so, well, I didn't see a lot of it. And I saw a few minutes. And I saw that Rutgers was holding their own, it seemed, well into the second half. It seemed like Kadeem Jack was very active. He was at least working on the boards and trying to be a presence. Miles Mack was pretty quick. They were getting behind the defense when they could. And I thought that they were defending pretty well, even though guys like Justin Jackson seemed also very active for Cincinnati. It seemed like, you know, I didn't know that they would win necessarily, but, you know, they would have the game at least in hand. And apparently, after I left last night, stepped out for dinner, it wasn't very good, by the way.
Dinner or the game?
The dinner. It was, it was very mediocre. But after I left, Rutgers managed to go on an epic cold spell where they didn't score for the last 11 minutes and 45 seconds. Those 3 points that they did score were from free throws.
Yeah. And the game ended with Rutgers lost by 20. I think it was 71-51?
Yeah, 71-51. And in the last 10 minutes, according to Ken Pom, which is the first thing that I checked, that Rutgers was outscored 19-3 in that last 10 minutes.
You know, that's bad offensively, clearly. But 19 points in 10 minutes, not bad defensively. I don't know how many of them came from the free throw line.
Okay, I guess.
I mean, if you're playing a normal game, you know, the way Rutgers wants to play, 19 points in the last 10 minutes is probably about what you're going to see.
That's an interesting point, and maybe a good point. And I guess you're right, because Rutgers does want to keep the pace up. And the week before against Louisville, they gave up 24 points in the last 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And so, what they do against Temple, do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, against Temple, they gave 22 points in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, so it's about where they want to play when they're competitive. But
yeah, given the pace, that makes sense.
So, you know, it sounded like I said, I was following on my phone, and what seemed to happen was Rutgers got down 8 and kind of battled back to within 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it stayed at 4 for about – it was 52-48. And it stayed at 4 for about 3 or 4 minutes. And that's when, I guess, I don't know, you know, you look at message boards, you read the articles, especially when you don't see the game, and you're kind of relying on that secondhand thing. But it seemed like a lot of fouls kind of went against Rutgers and kind of took the wind out of their sails.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. And, you know, for a team that's trying to turn the corner against a team that seems to be really good this year, that's a tough hill to climb on the road.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it sounds like they defended. It sounds like they, judging by Jordan's comments, Eddie Jordan gives very interesting press conferences.
Like he's not used to them, except he was in the NBA. How does he not know how to get a good press conference.
Yeah, let me see if I can find the quote I'm thinking about, because he gives Cincinnati credit and then goes on to give them absolutely no credit. Let's see. We got stuck at 48-52 for a long time. We went to our need sets and we didn't get good looks because we didn't do things right. Was it their defense? Yeah, we'll give them credit. When it comes down to it, we've got to make things happen. We've got to get it done. They played some zone and we put the ball where we wanted to. We didn't finish the way we wanted to. So it's interesting because he said it wasn't – I'll give them credit for playing defense, but it wasn't their defense because we did what we wanted to do and then didn't finish.
Yeah, which is, you know what I mean? Which is sort of a little bit two-faced. But on the other hand, I think it's better than, you know, just entirely giving them credit. For St. John's fans, St. John's fans know that Norm Roberts, of the former coach of St. John's before Steve Lavin took over, that Norm Roberts would seemingly in every press conference would say, give them credit. You know, and you'd be like, come on, stop giving them credit and come up with an answer.
Yeah, yeah. I do like his last quote. He said something about my favorite quote after the Louisville game is, hey, they're really good, and we're trying to be good. And he kind of put the same spin on it with this game. He says, it's a new team trying to learn how to win. We're trying to learn how to play together. We're trying to learn how to win. I think we're getting closer, but we've got to get it done. So it's good to see. I mean, you know, we've talked about the out-of-conference, how bad it was. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see him think they're trying to get better, because it's better than his quote after they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson and had Thanksgiving break, where he said that was the worst damn turkey I've ever had.
That's a good quote.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he sees progress and, you know, they learn from playing Louisville, because I guess in the first half, Cincinnati tried to pressure him, mm-hmm. and Rutgers kind of shredded their press a little bit. You know, and got out and fast break. And that's what kept them in the first half. They were only down 2 at halftime. So it seems like they're starting to execute the way Jordan wants. But again, it's that same thing. It's that learning to win thing. When you come up against adversity, they kind of crumble a little bit. So
yeah,
that's what it seems like to me. But who knows? They play UCF at home on Wednesday, and that's, you hate to say must win, but if you want to have an exciting season, you might have to win that game. Yeah. You know, and be 2-2, it could start to steamroll a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but that's Rutgers. I mean, real quick on them, they only had played the one game this week, and you know, turned into a 20-point loss. So, how much can you say?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a lot to say with a 20-point loss, but you know, I suppose there's more to say about a.
Join in on our listener question from last week. Kerwin Okoro got a minute.
Oh, hey.
And, yeah, so he played a minute at the end of the game, his first road action. And Seagears didn't play. He re-injured his ankle. He might be out a couple games.
Ah, crap.
So, yeah. So that probably hurt, too. I'm sure that bruising physical play kind of wore the guards down. Mm-hmm. So,
sure.
But, yeah. But so, Norman, you know, typical Rutgers on this end. What's the story with St. John's? I'm sure that it was an uplifting week, right?
Yes, the St. John's. Oh, wow. St. John's went out and lost to Villanova, 74-67. Villanova is ranked 8th or 10th, depending on which ranking system you use. And that's, you know,
what are they in KenPom?
What's that?
What are they in KenPom?
5th, I think.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So they're
good.
Okay. Yeah, they are.
Nobody's saying that this is a team of, you know, ducks out there.
Yep, 5th.
But the you know, the narrative around the team is getting a little tough and contentious. In part because I think there were, you know, very large expectations around St. John's, and a lot of the fans, I don't know if they're quite, no, they're kind of getting off the boat, you know, they're talking about you know, the need for, you know, meeting the expectations and just all of their frustration.
Yeah. What is this? You're 4 or 5 for 11.
What's that? Oh, you're four.
Okay. Yeah. So you got to start turning the page, turning the corner a little bit.
Even if you allow for a non-year where he was out with the cancer, you know, yeah, it is year 4, and I think people have a right to be upset about what's going on. I do think that some people take it are very interesting about it. You know, they're. You know, some people get very, very, very upset, and it's hard to talk about, because on a certain level, I feel like, this isn't unexpected, given the quality of St. John's and the ways that they needed to improve this year. The leap from 17 and 16 last year and to an NCAA tournament team, especially given this conference, that's a pretty big leap. And that, and I think that maybe not enough people really thought about the fact that, yes, you know, adding some talent is great, but leaping, you know, they were like 107 in KenPom last year. They, you know, lost in the second round to Virginia in the NIT last year. Mm-hmm. This isn't a team that was knocking on the door exactly. This was a team that was really struggling and had to, you know, really revamp how they went about playing basketball. And they have somewhat, but it's been a very slow development, a very slow growth.
Yeah. I watched the game yesterday, and I thought it was close up until the last 2 minutes, you know.
Yeah, what? I mean, there was a stretch around, like, I think between the six-minute and the five-minute mark where, you know, St. John's was, you know, really going back and forth, and then they just made a couple of mistakes.
Yeah.
They allowed two threes, and they had two turnovers. I think it was Sir Dominic Poynter and then D'Angelo Harrison trying to drive too deep into the lane. And both of those were converted into threes. And that was pretty much the balance of the game.
Yeah, I actually thought there was a play. I actually texted you. There's a play about a minute and a half left where they were down six, and they forced a turnover. I think it was Booth. What's his name? Green.
Green, you mean? Okay.
Green. Green forced a turnover. Drove down the court and looked like he was going to go right to the basket and, you know, either draw contact, get fouled, or take a layup. And the Villanova guy stepped in front of him, and instead of trying to draw the contact, he faded away for a baseline jumper and missed it. And that was the game right there. It was just a terrible shot. I mean, draw contact, because they had been going to the basket the whole game. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed because of what we've talked about. You know, the jump shots they take, the bad shots that I really thought they were going to the basket. They were executing a game plan and hanging around. And when they had a last ditch effort to try and get into it, get back in it, they broke down.
Mm-hmm. I think on a macro level, once again, I will say that I'm not saying that the season's lost. It's still January, but you know, there were things that St. John's really needed to do and games that they really needed to win to stay on the cusp. And right now they've put themselves in a position where, and it might be, and this might be something that Lavin's used to from his UCLA days, they're putting themselves into a position where they pretty much need to run the table for much of the rest of the season. You know, they can't afford many losses. And, you know, Lavin's UCLA teams would suddenly turn it around in mid-January or so and have a run and then have a few conference tournament wins and when they had a conference tournament, and then make it to the NCAAs on a run. And that's great,
but you need
a deep league for that.
Yeah. And you don't want to be walking the wire, you know, like, oh, we better win eight in a row, you know?
Yeah.
That's really well. I mean, it's fun to watch if you're a fan and it happens, but, you know, even if they're 1-2, you know, if they had won yesterday, they're 1-2. You're feeling a little better because they beat a really good team, you know, or Georgetown, any of those games. If they had won one of those games, you're like, all right, we got our win. You know, there's still time. Right now it's 0-3, and who do they have next?
They have a very easy stretch. They have DePaul, Providence, Dartmouth, and Seton Hall.
Dartmouth?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they playing an out-of-conference game?
I don't know. Because that's what it was scheduled? I don't know.
Okay, that's just strange. Yeah, they do have it. That's an easy stretch, and they could get some confidence by that. But DePaul's my sleeper.
But, you know, well, and I'll get to that. I'll get to that, too. But I do think that the whole idea that, you know, that this is a stretch of winnable games, that's true. But the Big East is such that they're also a stretch of losable games, except for Dartmouth.
Yeah.
And I think that people also have to realize that one of the biggest problems that the Big East is going to have this year is that the teams are very competitive. Even DePaul isn't quite as DePaul as they used to be.
Yeah. Know,
there's no Rutgers at the bottom of the league.
Hey.
Got that in there. No, there's no Rutgers at the bottom of the league. There's no There's no South Florida.
That's better.
Seton Hall is, you know, they have a full complement of talent until they all break.
Yeah.
And when you think about that in a 10-team league in a true round robin, there are a lot of opportunities to stumble. I think that DePaul this year, I think they've been close against St. John's in the past, and I think that, you know, St. John's at DePaul, this could be bad.
St. John's kind of plays the game that DePaul
wants to play,
does well in. So
yeah, and DePaul has been happy to run. And despite the wins, if you're watching those DePaul St. John's games, there are stretches where you just look at St. John's and you're like, why? You're like giving the game away. You're just playing wild and going, hey, open shots, and
yeah,
playing into DePaul's hurried pace style. And that's great, but St. John's, despite the low turnovers, it's not like they're all great ball handlers, so you don't want to step into that cauldron.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. I've been thinking a lot about building a program and recruiting, because I've seen it so much with Rutgers and St. John's as well. And it seems like, yeah, Mike Rice pulled in this great recruiting class, and so did Lavin. But it seemed they pulled in guys with high rankings, but are selfish in a way. I don't know if that's not learning how to play together or just that's not who the big, you know, the winning programs are recruiting. So,
well,
you know what I mean?
Let me ask then, who are you calling out on the Rutgers side?
Who am I calling out on the Rutgers side? It's a good question. Well, I was thinking Eli Carter, but he's no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's where
shots,
I would have
shots.
Yeah. The get their shots and you know, that sort of thing. And when they're on, hey, it's great. But you know, I think you see a little bit of that in Seegers this year. But even he's starting to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to change the culture at Rutgers. But you know, we've talked JJ Moore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sort of thing. But I am definitely seeing a change. And I don't know if that's how Mike Rice wanted to run his system. Hey, let's get somebody hot. We'll have that one player, and then we'll play defense, and we'll win 54 or 50. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at the past, Fred Hill had Rosario. Hey, Mike, do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Waters
had... you need a scorer, yeah.
Yeah. Gary Waters had Doobie. Hey, Doobie, do whatever you want. You know? So is that because...
I have a thought on that. I think with Rutgers in particular, and I think St. John's actually had tried to do this with Norm Roberts. I think a lot of teams, what they do is they try to get, you know, a solid talent base, but then look out for a guy who really, really wants to be the man and give him a chance to showcase, because that allows you to get a great individual talent without having to get him to completely buy in necessarily. So you're allowing yourself to feed his ego and his ability, which will also get that player to the next level. And your team has somebody that they can depend on that draws a lot of attention while everybody else does their job and makes their shots. You know, it's kind of the way that a really good mid-major tournament team seems to rerun, you know, team with Damian Lillard or a team with Harold Arsenault. Oh, wait, I just said two Weber State guys. Wow.
but no, I mean,
a team with Dan McClintock of Northern Arizona. I went back in time for that one.
Yeah. But look at it this way, because when it backfires, it causes such chemistry problems that the team just kind of crumbles. You know what I mean?
Sure, but I mean, I think the chemistry problems come from more than that. I think that there are a lot of issues going on there. And I feel like with both Rutgers and St. John's, it's a little bit different this time around, because Rutgers had a guy in Miles Mack who could also score and get his shots, and other guys who, honestly, Kadeem Jack is, at least the way he used to play, he seemed like a guy who was just really thinking, ooh, I could take a shot now, you know?
Right.
And that's the only thing that really excited him on the court. St. John's has a couple of guys who are versatile in Sir Dominic Poynter and now in Orlando Sanchez. But then they have guys like Phil Green and D'Angelo Harrison, who at first and foremost are shot takers and shot makers. Mm-hmm. And I think Lavin was trying to build a squad where, you know, they weren't timid. They were aggressive and they were very interested in getting their own shots individually or with the team. Where the scheme is falling apart is, I think sometimes, especially when in trouble, some of the guys don't remember that sharing the ball is part of how you get open.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there are some technical issues there too, whether, you know, certain guys in their dribble, certain guys have being easily defensible, and just the ability to come up with a scheme that's quick, active, energetic, and puts the defense on its heels in the half court. You know, these are big problems for St. John's.
I also think the thing that hurt Lavin was Harkless going pro.
Yeah, but, you know, I feel like he's said something along those lines, too. And I feel like you can't – well, for one, you can't fault a guy –
that was Lavin who said – I thought that was you. I thought I was quoting you, but I guess it was Lavin.
No, I think Lavin said it because I don't – I can't fault a guy for going pro. That's kind of why you're there in the first place. Yeah. Second, Lavin's always highlighted his ability to get guys to the pros, so you can't fault a guy for, you know, taking a real opportunity and going pro. And I don't know that – I mean, I think Harkless was good. I don't know how much better he was going to get on the college level. I think he really needed to be pushed a little bit more to expand his game.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he played for St. John's another year, he would have played basically a power forward, and he would have been a pretty dynamic power forward. I don't know. Maybe he would have gotten better, but I don't know how much he changes the narrative if he stays 2-3 years.
Yeah, I don't think he would be playing this year either way. I think he would have gone after last year. But I think if he had stayed last year, that would have helped that team.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, if he stays and that gets them three or four more wins, you know, and they get to the tournament, that changes the narrative of where you are this year.
Yes, very true.
So,
and also the level of buy-in from the players this year.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's you know, I think that once you start to see that success, it changes everything. And even if you lose your best player, everybody else kind of knows what it takes.
Yeah.
Kind of. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
It kind of does. And I think that Harkless, at the very least, was a heady enough player that I think he could have worked better with what was left after D'Angelo Harrison, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Whatevered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe Harrison would be less frustrated if there was somebody else to draw the attention of defenses.
Right.
Because Harrison was, in some ways, better playing alongside Harkless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. He wasn't... I mean, he had some real struggles, especially trying to score inside the arc, and some real selfishness at the end of the year.
Right.
But generally, I don't know. I mean, so maybe you're right. Maybe I'm being a little harsh on the revisionist history, but I don't know.
It's so hard to say. It's just interesting watching programs being built and what happens and where that change happens.
Yeah.
You know, is it because the prototypical one I think about is the Villanova one, Wright's first 3 years.
Oh, God, those are terrible.
4 years.
Terrible.
Those first 2 years were so disappointing, and they had the phones problem.
Yep.
And then – you know, Lowry comes in the whatever that was, the fourth year, and they beat Kansas, and it kind of changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, and they learn how to play together. And I'm honest when I'm saying I'm starting to see that with Rutgers, and I don't know if that's Eddie Jordan, and I know they're having a disappointing year, but you're starting to see them play together.
Yeah.
And it's such a different offense than what Mike Rice ran. And you have to wonder if Rice was here, where would the players' mentality have changed, or is that a new voice, you know, and a change of a lot of different faces? You know, like, where does the change happen, the mental change?
Yeah. That's a good question. And I think that, you know, it's great to have a new voice sometimes. You know, like in baseball, they talk about how, you know, that's one of the big effects of having a new manager.
Yeah,
it's having a new voice and somebody that the players haven't tuned out yet, or somebody who has a different way of getting to the players and getting them to play hard.
Yeah, that's what I should have asked that last week when we had that Villanova guy on. Like, what caused the change in mentality? You know, that fourth year when they did beat Kansas. You know what I mean? Was it Lowry, just that extra added heady player, or was it the big class growing up, you know, like what happened there?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I'll take a moment. Did you have a listener question this week? 'Cause we have one.
Oh, I didn't get one.
Okay.
No.
Because I'm going to borrow a little bit of the listener question for this, and this is from Ricky, who has a blog called Yanks Go Yard, among other things.
That's a good blog.
Yeah, and is a an avid St. John's fan. And he says, I know everybody wants to blame Lavin for the team's 0-3 start, but, you know, you have to put some of the blame on the players. And also, does this make Tuesday's game at DePaul a virtual must-win? He also makes a comment about how the players should be experienced enough to win in this league. And it's interesting, as you're talking about the change in the program and the change in the mentality, how much of that is on the coach and how much of that is on the players? Because right. You can say, yes, the coach needs to do everything and push them, etc. But even if you put guys in the right scheme, they have to have enough reactiveness. They have to be comfortable in it and reactive in it enough that they can make it work.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, a coach's job is also to find ways of pushing those buttons, of hammering it into people or making them so miserable that they're going to do the things they need to do. You know, Bob Huggins has had so many interesting teams where, you know, either, you know, they start off hot and they kind of fall apart, or, you know, there's last year's team or the year before where they were just terrible and they just played just stupid basketball. And it's fascinating to see a coach like that having to deal with that kind of squad. But then he had years with, you know, guys like Deshaun Butler and Devin Ebanks. And, you know, that's a team that he muscled them into playing a good, smart brand of basketball. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it very interesting. That's one of the things I have always looked for. And I always try to look at the teams that did rebuild under good coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, Howland did it in 3 years at Pitt. And Pitt was bad when he came in.
Yeah, they were terrible.
You know, and where did that change happen? Like, I just find that very interesting. And you know, you never, at least in my, well, in a lot of people's experience with Rutgers, we just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what is different at Rutgers in terms of coaching and players and that sort of thing, that's not different with Howland or Wright or, you know, they were both mid-major coaches coming in, mm-hmm. you know, Howland and Wright and that sort of thing. So what's going on that what's different?
I don't know.
and there's no real answer, you know.
And I don't think there is. I think sometimes it really does depend on the players and on whether you get the right players and whether it clicks for them. You know, I watching St. John's, you can't help but think that D'Angelo Harrison is kind of that guy. I know he has, and I know he has a reputation as being some sort of chucker, but he's not actually a chucker.
He's played a lot different this year from what I've seen.
Even last year, I think people don't give him credit for being a player who knows that he needs to score, but also a player who's looking for opportunities for others. Like, he'll look for the pass, he will rebound, and he does an amazing job of finding ways of drawing fouls.
Right.
I think a lot of the other guys on the squad don't. You know, people in the on Twitter were making comments about the disparity in free throws yesterday. And while that's true, and there was a heavy, heavy disparity, it was 40 free throws for Villanova and 24 for St. John's. That's a disparity.
Yes.
But if you watch Villanova, they are amazingly crafty, as if they work on it, at drawing fouls. They
yes.
throw their upper body into players on drives. They, you know, at one point, Josh Hart drew a three-shot foul. I think it was Josh Hart.
It was Hart, yeah.
Yeah, it was Josh Hart on Orlando Sanchez. And what he did was he took his shot. Orlando Sanchez came out to defend and was a little late, had his hand up, and was maybe a little close. Josh Hart just conveniently, his finish, has his legs go out in front of him inside the three-point line, and he lands on Orlando Sanchez's feet, falls over, gets the three-shot foul. You know yeah. what? If you are taking a shot, isn't your zone supposed to be straight up and down? If you landed inside the line, if the guy who fouled you is inside the line, isn't that not a foul?
Yes, he is very crafty.
That is
like
crafty.
I said yesterday, he's very crafty, you know, makes ashtrays out of popsicle sticks, you know, that sort of thing.
He'll knit you a hat. He's so crafty.
And shoot three foul shots at the same time. But, I mean, you got to give the – it's a win – It's crafty. It's a winning play. Yeah. I
also can't hate on it because D'Angelo Harrison is also very good at, you know, driving into traffic and going, ah, you know, the hands in the air. And he's great at it. And that's what good basketball is about. Mm-hmm. You know, finding ways of, you know, occasionally flopping like Italian soccer players.
Right. Oh, I'm hurt. 3 seconds later. Oh, I scored the goal.
Yeah. Villanova does a really good job of making winning plays. And it wasn't and not just in drawing fouls. They also make winning plays in getting back on defense, on knowing where their other man is. They seem to communicate very well on offense and defense. They get open well. They share the ball well. And St. John's has a lot of there's a lot that they need to still do to get to that point.
Right. And it's so interesting because you talk about Josh Hart. And he's a freshman, mm-hmm. and he's been, you know, that culture has been created. You know, yeah, Jay Wright had a couple of down years, but his culture is the same. Mm-hmm. You know, so a kid like Hart, who's talented enough, is not relied on to be the savior. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he can do his thing, and then, you know, he starts to get the calls too, because they have Archer Diacono and the forward who reminds me of Samson, but Pinkston.
Okay.
Is it Pinkston?
Yeah, Javon Pinkston, yeah.
Yeah, so that sort of thing. So he just has to fit in his role, and he looks better because of it.
Yeah. I mean, so. with St. John's, you know, there's also the question of, you know, we've been waiting for this year for years, you know, the year where they become juniors and they're veterans.
Yeah.
And this is, I think one of the biggest sources of disappointment is that, as veterans, I mean, they're playing better, and I think that people are discounting that too, mm-hmm. but they are better than they were. They're just not good enough, and not good to the point where you would expect them to be as, you know, experienced players, you know?
And for all the ballyhoo that they had coming in.
Yeah. I mean, this is still a team that gets all of its shots from the field, from two-pointers. They shot 2 of 11 from outside the arc yesterday. Though 5 of those shots and 1 of those makes was from Max Hooper. So, you know, that's whatever. But you have a whole roster of guys that don't shoot from deep, but they shoot from kind of deep, where it only counts 2 points and doesn't count for 3. And right. You have a roster of guys that don't seem to be able to really draw foul shots. So, right. You know, you know, you're not going to be able to score like that. There were definitely fouls that were not called in favor of St. John's. That's true. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's always the loser's lament about the calls that you didn't get. Yeah. That happens to everybody, and you have to find a way to power through it and make the officials give you the calls. Also, it was a home game for St. John's, so, you know, maybe just got to try harder.
Right. Well, I also think that's part of going back to building a program. That's part of it too. Is there's usually the teams that turn the clock what's the term I'm looking for? Who turn it around? In that year, they turn it around. Mm-hmm. They have a bunch of wins where they probably beat good teams and the officials. Mm-hmm. You know, that year that you learn to win, you almost have to be better than you expect to be.
Kind of like the St. John's 2011 year, the Dwight Hardy year.
You beat the refs and the team, and then you build a reputation for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it too. So yeah, fans lament, but you need to be better than that. I find this an interesting year. I mean, the at a conference session, I was like done with Rutgers basketball. I was really frustrated, but it's kind of turned a little bit.
Well, yeah, because what you're seeing is a sense of what the future is going to look like. And you have a new coach, you have a new, mm-hmm. there's a new hope. There's a lot of interesting stuff to be learned from this kind mm-hmm. of year.
Yeah, and seeing that they've changed and they're starting to share the ball and starting to play, whether it's Jordan making adjustments or the team learning what they are supposed to do, they're starting to play better defense mm-hmm. for what they want to do. They're not playing, you know, the defense Mike Rice wanted to play, but they're slowing the other team down enough that offensively they can hang in there usually.
Yeah.
Except for yesterday.
And meanwhile, for St. John's, you know, in a year that you expect, you know, actual results, you know, even with development, this year has just been, you know, disappointing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have guys who, you know, they're keeping their heads up and they're going to keep trying, but I don't know. I mean, what does that future look like? And then what does next year look like without Orlando Sanchez? I don't know.
So you have
DePaul
on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What are your keys to the game there?
Don't lose.
No matter what it takes.
Even if you have to do a did you ever see The Last Boy Scout?
Yes.
Even if you have to replicate the first scene from The Last Boy Scout. No, don't do
that. No.
Don't do that. No, against DePaul, I think the keys are going to be not turning the ball over and playing well down low, not fouling a lot. I think those are going to be the two biggest keys. I think DePaul is able to use their size very well, and sometimes they're pretty annoying on the press. They will give up points, and St. John's has to be able to take those points when those opportunities are given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And who does Rutgers have?
Sorry. Rutgers has – I was trying to look up the name of the player. Rutgers has UCF on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's UCF is 9-5. I think they just lost by 20-something to UConn.
Nice.
And it's pretty much, like you said, a must-win. You know, if you're going to have any source of excitement, you got to win this game. And the key is to slow their best player down, whose name I'm trying to look up. It's like Isaiah Sykes or something
Isaiah
like that.
Yeah, Isaiah Sykes, yeah.
Yeah. He seems to be, you know, their engine that makes them go.
Six wing, takes a lot of shots, hits a lot of shots. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like Temple, the Quentin DeCozy.
Mm-hmm.
So you slow him down, whether that's putting Brown on him or that sort of thing, and you run your offense. You know, at home, hopefully you get the crowd behind you a little bit, if there is a crowd, and see how it goes.
Yeah. I should also add that St. John's also has their busy week this week. They have Providence on the 16th on Thursday, and then Dartmouth on Saturday. So there's a game every other day.
Wow. Rutgers only has UCF on Tuesday, and we'll record before the next game, which is Sunday. I think they have Houston at 1.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Norman. So this has been not half bad. I think this was an interesting discussion about program building, which we didn't expect. But this has been Not Half Bad. I'm Dave White of On the Banks, the Rutgers blog. You can find me on Twitter at Dave_White. And buy my books, When One Man Dies and the Evil That Men Do, wherever ebooks are sold.
Buy his books. This is Norman of Rumble in the Garden. I have no books, but maybe one day. You can find me at RumbleSBN for the main Rumble feed, or Ecoast Bias for my own feed. And, this week I guess we'll have a lot of content about a number of St. John's games.
Yeah, and hopefully something with Rutgers to talk about.
Yeah, and keep listening and keep sending in your questions to nothalfbadpod@gmail.com. That's nothalfbadpod@gmail.com. Or find us on Twitter at NHBpod.
And we love having listeners and listener questions, so thank you very much.
Yeah, keep sending them in.
Subscribe.
We'll see you later.